Of the 12 deadliest shootings in American history, half of them have happened in the past 5 years. That's a statistic cited in a statement released yesterday by Congressman John Larson. He's a Democrat, and he's from Connecticut. And in that statement, he called for immediate measures to curb access to certain types of weapons and ammunition. Congressman John Larson joins me now on the line. And Congressman, first of all, my condolences to you and to all the people of Connecticut.
Well, thank you, Guy. You know, our hearts are broken. But we need to respond. If we do nothing, we being the Congress, we are, in fact, complicit. It's not an assault against the NRA or gun owners, God bless them, and I respect their right to own and carry and for recreation purposes have guns. Nothing to do with that. This is about saving lives of children. This is about preventing another massacre of this nature, and it's as much about mental health issues and a community response as well. And it is about a national conversation, as the president has indicated, but we have to act. We can't just stand and lower the flags and ache along with everybody in Newtown, Connecticut, and especially for these parents. We have a responsibility to act.
Congressman, you have called for a ban on assault weapons, a ban on high-capacity clips, background checks for all gun sales, something that, as you say, does not happen at unlicensed gun shows.
Mm-hmm.
Your state, Connecticut, has some of the strictest gun laws in the country. What could more gun control do?
Well, as I said in the release, I don't know that any specific action as it relates to providing common sense regulations will stop somebody who has the mind to do something. However, that doesn't mean that common sense practical matters shouldn't be taken as a matter of prevention. Just like after terrorist attacks, we changed the way that we look at things in this country. We changed the way that we responded because we recognized that there was a threat, that there was a danger. And as you point out, you know, these things are occurring with greater frequency and greater intensity as well.
There are, as you know, hundreds of millions of guns. It's estimated 300 million guns in private hands already in the U.S. How does a new weapons ban, help make us safer, if that's the case?
Well, I think from my perspective, you put a tourniquet on and you stop the bleeding. Look, the point is this, that I don't think any single measure, you know, I don't think any single mental health measure, I don't think any single gun control measure, nor any single community-wide response in and of itself will provide the panacea. But I do think that a comprehensive approach, a common-sense, practical approach that both NRA owners and, you know, gun control advocates would agree on, that this makes common sense. I would rather be erring on the side of common sense, pragmatism, and doing everything possible so that I felt that no stone was left unturned in terms of trying to protect school children.
Congressman, when you return to Washington with your colleagues, why do you think it will be different this time? I mean, there have been calls to strengthen gun laws before, obviously, especially after horrific tragedies.
Yeah.
Why will it be different this time?
I believe that the horrific nature of this and that every single parent across this country and the innocence of these kids is just so shocking and horrific that I believe that, and it's my hope, that Congress will respond.
That's Democratic Congressman John Larson from Connecticut. Congressman, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Guy.
Paul Barrett wrote a book on how guns became so pervasive in America. It's called Glock. And in a recent article for Business Week magazine, he wrote about why he believes stricter gun laws may not make a difference and why he believes things like assault weapons bans are utterly pointless.
Because there's nothing distinctively lethal about the guns that tend to be labeled assault weapons. That's just another term, a sort of pejorative term for a military-style semi-automatic rifle, which means a rifle that fires one round for each pull of the trigger. We tried banning certain assault weapons in the 1990s. Two things happened. One, the gun industry immediately found its way around the ban by simply tinkering with the design of guns. And two, criminologists have been unable to identify any significant effect on crime rates that they can link to that particular piece of legislation. And actually, there's a third point to make, which is this style of rifle really had not been particularly popular among gun buyers, had not been pushed heavily by gun sellers until it was banned, until it became notorious. And then, as happens pretty consistently with our strange, you could even say perverse, firearm marketplace in this country, when you try to restrict something, you try to ban it, it makes it more popular among people who like guns.
We mentioned to John Larson something that you have pointed out in your work, which is that there are hundreds of millions of guns in private hands in this country. So what difference would it make? He acknowledges that these kinds of laws may not end gun violence and these kinds of tragedies, but that something has to be done. That's his argument.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very, very understandable on a human level and an emotional level to say and to deeply believe that something must be done, and something must be done immediately, and it has to be dramatic. And banning a weapon that you see as being particularly dangerous feels like you're getting something done. But it's also important to distinguish between symbolic gestures and the particular goal you're trying to accomplish. And that's why when approaching these issues, as difficult as they are, and in the wake of a horrific massacre like this, as difficult as it is to think clearly, we really do need to pause, take a deep breath, and ask, what can we do in the short term, medium term, long term, that is actually likely to prevent this type of event?
Well, what would you do?
Well, when I go to Yankee Stadium to attend a Yankees game, I get searched. So does everybody else who goes into the stadium. The very first thing I would do in connection with deterring or stopping or ameliorating the impact of mass shootings in public places would be to increase security. This is not a panacea. This is not a very satisfying or emotionally resonant response. It doesn't ban anything. It seems very mundane. But if I owned a movie theater, or I ran a house of worship, or I supervised a school, I would make sure that you had armed security the way we do in front of federal court buildings, in front of other government buildings, and the type of security that we routinely accept these days at sports stadiums and at airports.
But Paul, you're talking about a potential massive expansion of the private security industry in this country. Is that the kind of America you want to see?
No, that's not what I want. I realize this is not a very emotionally or politically satisfying answer, but it is my first best answer for something that can be done about particular public places if you want to try to diminish the danger, if you actually want to do something.
Well, what's the second answer?
My second answer is that we begin a very thorough review of how we as a society deal with mental illness and the intersection between mental illness, criminal behavior, and violence. Right now, it is almost impossible for the relatives or friends or colleagues of someone who's older than 18 years old to get them some type of forced medical treatment if their behavior begins to appear threatening. We have a very porous, disorganized system for dealing with that situation, and I think we need to talk much more and figure out a different set of rules for what people can do when they see a loved one, a work colleague, a student, what have you, beginning to deteriorate. And we need to figure out how to separate those people from weapons, make sure they get medicated, and make sure that this mentally ill person doesn't commit some other lesser crime and end up in prison. We have hundreds of thousands of mentally ill people in prison. Our de facto social policy right now is to warehouse them in prisons. That's not working either, and that's the area that I would focus on. You'll notice that neither of my responses immediately requires a debate about the Second Amendment. It could be worked on in parallel alongside a debate about gun control. And by the way, there are certain gun control changes that I support too, but I don't have the illusion that they would prevent mass killings like the one we've just witnessed.
That's Paul Barrett. He's an assistant managing editor and a senior writer at Bloomberg Businessweek, and he's also the author of the book Glock, The Rise of America's Gun. Paul Barrett, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on your show.